Welcome to Freedom Loves Company. Freedom Loves Company, second hour of the show. My name is John Shuck, and my website is johnshuck.com. Also, progressivespirit.net. You can go to those two websites, either one, and pick up the podcast. After the show airs, I put it in a little hour-long podcast, so you can have each show, and they can also be distributed to other radio stations if they'd like to pick them up. They are radio ready. And again, a shout out and a thank you to Kevin Ryan, my guest last hour, author of Another 19, in regards to 9/11. He's a 9/11 researcher and has done a lot of work also on researching COVID. We had a great conversation this last hour. You can follow Kevin Ryan, by the way, at his blog, digwithin.net, or follow him on Facebook and Twitter as well. So what I want to do this hour is kind of talk about some of the psychology, spirituality about things. Last week, I talked about gaslighting and that psychological tactic that is used against us, against the people. And I think many people are starting to awaken. Hopefully not too late, that we are really under attack in many respects here, under attack. And this, when we realize that, the emotions can come up, and one of the most powerful emotions is fear. And fear has been spread throughout our world right now. Fear of this virus, for example, but all other forms of fear as well. And then there's a fear in those who see the picture, not necessarily a fear of the virus, but a fear of what's going to happen to us. What are we going to do? How do we fight this? Fear or despair, really. And so I want to talk about that because I think it's very important to talk about that fear that we have inside of us. I'm not saying everybody has. I'm not necessarily saying it's that you have it or anything. I do. I'll admit it right up. Yeah. But it's not a helpful emotion. And as we hear in the in these promotions in between the shows, you know, fear is in your head about events in the future. Danger is real, but fear is an illusion. An emotion. It isn't about a real thing, but it does affect us. And so I want to talk about fear and despair and how I'm going to do that. I wrote a little essay, but it isn't, that's only like a few minutes. So I want to kind of lead to it by reading a couple of things I haven't read yet here before on this station, on Revolution Radio, my show here, Freedom Loves Company. I haven't read it here yet. And so I want to share a couple of articles that I wrote last year, and I want to share them because I haven't shared them for a while because they're a little darker in terms of the fear and despair part, and I kind of want to share them to get them out, and then I want to share my my other essay and a little bit of an essay from actually one of the people I interviewed a few weeks ago, Tessa Lena, who wrote a nice article about fear and how to deal with that. So I want to read first of all. So it's kind of be a lead. I've got two articles that are kind of, really are my honest explorations about the fear and despair about what we're facing. And then I want to go to this next part and say, okay, now how are we going to, now we need to act from love. Now we need to act from courage. Now we need to act from joy, really. Because fear is not a good weapon. They use it, but we can't use fear back at them because that's just going to mess us up. Anyway, this was called Cruelty and Hope, this piece. And I wrote it July 20th, 2020. So that's 13 months ago. This is what I wrote 13 months ago. Cruelty and Hope. The cruelty. That's what's destroying my soul. And the clincher for me that COVID was a psychological operation was when they canceled March Madness. The students were so excited about the tournament. East Tennessee State University Bucks had finished their best season in decades, perhaps ever, and the news simply announced that the tournament was over. They attacked the young people first. And I saw the meanness in that. And I knew intuitively that this was Satan's work. Their cruelty has abounded since then. It's more than simply destroying humanity or turning us into robots or reducing the population. It's the excessive amount of cruelty by which it is done that destroys my hope. I weep. God, I weep. Why? If there's a God, why? I remember as a kid being taught by another kid, a few years older than me, how to make ants fight to the death. And I did it once. Same kid liked to take a magnifying glass and fry them in the sun. Well, what made this fun? He was just a kid. So was I. And I think on that and realize that we're nothing more in the minds of our conquerors. We are but ants to them. I can't fight this anymore. I've lost all hope. I'll be judged for that if there is a judge. Judged for giving up, for abandoning hope. I doubt now that there is a righteous judge. I'm thinking that the universe, existence itself, is a cruel joke run by evil. Sometimes I hold out hope that there is a good beyond it, but I'm losing that hope daily. My heroes, my friends, my conspiracy theorist, quote-unquote, pals, who take the abuse each day for posting what they see happening to us, keep at it through varying degrees of personal despair. If we can just post the right meme, if we can just dismantle one lie in this delusion, if we can make people see some of the falsehood, even just a little bit, people will awaken. And we keep at it. Meanwhile, people cannot awaken because they cannot believe that such cruelty exists. They cannot imagine that those they have been conditioned to trust are so evil, so cruel. The longer it goes on, the more people fear, and the more they trust their authorities, and the more they hate those who challenge the illusion of security provided by these authorities. In all the movies, Matrix, Hunger Games, for example, the good people win. But who made the movies? The evil Satanists made the movies. All of this is a movie. It's their movie. They're playing us, even through that. They're so far ahead of us, like the consciousness of a human versus the consciousness of an ant, that even hope, even God in every religion and the good in every philosophy and practice is their creation. It's cruelty all the way up and all the way down. Even goodness is an illusion. There is no pure heart. We are all made in cruelty's image. It isn't that evil is a distortion of good, but good is a distortion of evil. Not a distortion, really, just a cipher, a rube, a program in this cruel, sick game. Is that blasphemy? Am I saying too much? Is there anything worthy of hope? Do I have it wrong? My friends are fighting. They are warriors. They're not giving up. They fight in the belief that good can defeat this evil before total enslavement. And the last thing I want to do is to discourage that spirit. That fight is the last remnant of our soul. But I have to ask if we are doing anything more than playing their game. Maybe. Maybe we are doing something. The USS Liberty did not sink. Israel and the traitor-in-chief, LBJ, tried their best to sink the USS Liberty on June 8, 1967, but the last torpedo fired that should have sunk it hit a beam in the ship and it did not break it in two. The USS Liberty did not sink, and its survivors tell her story to this day. That's a sign of hope for me. If divine intervention, the good, saved the liberty, was it saved for nothing? I meditate on that, and I hope yet. In October 2018, I learned the story of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, Hussein ibn Ali, and his courageous stand against Yazid. I don't know how that all worked out, that I would visit his shrine in Karbala, Iraq. I don't know what it means that the moment I was about to touch the shrine and I couldn't reach it to be assisted, to have my hand pushed against the grate and to look into the eyes of the person who did it, I don't know what that means. I just know it happened, and I felt a summons to speak what I thought was true. Was it a divine sign? Maybe I'm just being played. But I hope yet. Hope is thin. So thin it rests on a razor's edge. Hope is so thin that I lose it in the fog. Cruelty is thick. It is a dense fog that covers all. It grows thicker each day. We have no time left. The cruel plan is unfolding faster and faster. It won't be long, a few months, a few years on the outside, before we're all transformed into an artificial existence. Our humanity is being stripped away from us. It's begun with this masking, the walking in rows, the distancing, the isolating, the destruction of our societies, divide and conquer. But more than that, the inability of the many to see what is happening before their very eyes. How can others not see what I see? It's so difficult to fathom that everyone, from former church members to family members to the most aware people I thought I knew, not to see that this is all terribly, terribly wrong. Such is the deception, such is the cruelty, such is the thickness of illusion. We are under a spell. Can it be broken? I don't know. In this thick fog, I still clutch the thin hope that if I can tell my truth at all, then it is not over. Not yet. We are human. We are not sick. We are not diseased. We are not contagious. We are being deceived. Awaken. Breathe. That was a piece I wrote 13 months ago, July 20, 2020, called Cruelty and Hope. This is Freedom Loves Company. My name is John Shuck. Freedom Loves Company airs every Sunday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. Mountain Time, 8 to 10 Eastern, midnight to 2 a.m. GMT. And I'm talking about fear. Fear and despair is the theme for this hour. And I have another piece I want to share with you. These are some of the couple of the darker pieces that I wrote. Because I feel it, and you got to get it out, I think. And then you go to the next place. And then I want to share another piece that I wrote just today. So this is called Reflections on the Technocratic Takeover. This is from October 19th, 2020. So I wrote this October 19, 2020, Reflections on the Technocratic Takeover. Each day I'm confronted with the enormity of the technocratic reality overwhelming us. From what I am seeing and learning and experiencing, it appears that humanity is being transformed into an artificial and controlled existence. This virus is meaningless in and of itself. It is merely a cover for this technocratic agenda. I invite you to watch James Corbett's podcast on the Great Reset, October 16, 2020. So how do we stop this? Few questions matter more than this. It is possible that we do not stop this takeover. It is possible that we will be enslaved within a few years by the technocratic elites who have engineered this and planned this for decades, perhaps generations. And while it would be easier to resist now while we still have some agency, the spell or the psyop is too powerful and is keeping the masses from awareness of what is happening. Humanity as a whole likely will not realize what has become of it until it's too late, and we have little or no agency left to resist. So how does the aware individual exist in such a state? How do we be aware and not fall into despair? I am most certainly in despair. What hope I have is based on the long game. The long game is that goodness and truth exist, but the time scale for the actualization of truth and goodness is far beyond a human lifetime for certain, and likely far beyond the lifetime of civilization. In other words, neither you or I are getting out of slavery. We and our descendants could be enslaved for thousands of years. Well, what is the hope? Traditional religion may provide echoes of something hopeful, particularly in the area of human physical contact, and that's why churches have been shut down or sterilized. No passing the peace, for instance, even within churches that do gather physically. Don't touch each other. And this is why gathering and resisting the manipulations to mask, distance, and isolate ourselves are so crucial. Also, singing, praying, and chanting together in close physical proximity are crucial to retain our humanity. I invite you to see my podcast, Ecclesia, on my website, johnshuck.com, in which I talk about that. But institutional religion has served as a tool for these transhumanist technocratic oppressors. The churches are now falling all over themselves to provide virtual worship and offer its symbols and doctrines to further the goals of the technocratic elite by exhorting its followers that following the dictates of social distancing and masking are virtuous and reflect the will of Jesus Christ. I believe the opposite is true, of course. Islam, as well, has allowed the technocratic elite to hijack its symbols. We are under a spell. The sobering reality seems to be that religion in all of its forms is a tool that will soon be discarded when it loses its usefulness. One religion will emerge, which is best illustrated by the latest Super Bowl halftime show. Did you see the little children in cages in this festival of sexploitation? It was the last big show before the COVID psyop shut us all down. The apocalyptic strain in religion may provide some hope. This is a reason why mainstream religion that is controlled by technocratic elites have mocked apocalyptic religion. But apocalypticism knows a bigger story. Apocalypticism allows for evil. Even evil this large that is now encompassing us. It allows for it with a larger framework of the goodness and truth of God beyond our time scale. I'm suggesting that if you want to retain your religion, take seriously the apocalyptic elements. If we get out of this, it will be because of supernatural intervention. But if apocalypticism is going to provide hope, it will need to connect with others. For example, the apocalyptic followers of Christianity and Islam will have to forge alliances against the technocratic elite rather than allow the elites to divide them over sectarian interests. I also wish to point to Gnosticism as a possibility of hope. My favorite librarians of all time were those responsible for preserving the Nag Hammadi Library when Orthodox Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire in 381, false or fake religion had to be fact-checked, so to speak. Other forms of Christianity besides empire-approved orthodoxy were systematically censored and eliminated. The faithful librarians in Nag Hammadi, Egypt, saw this purge coming, and they preserved these texts. And by miracle, really, they emerged in 1945 after being buried for 1,600 years, and only recently have they been translated into English and made available to us. My mainstream religious training dismissed them as having little value, but I see it quite differently now. They may, in fact, contain many keys of resistance to this technocratic prison that is enslaving us. I recommend the Secret Revelation of John, among others. Now, I don't know if we do stop this. The odds are not in our favor. But instead of despair, I look to the long game, to deep time. In the meantime, in the now time, I trust that there is a light, a spark within, and I treasure it, and I embrace it, and I let it center me, because when I do not do those things, this is all too much to bear. Find your light, beloveds, and let it shine. And this is from the Secret Revelation of John. This is not to be confused with the revelation that's in the Bible. This is another text found in Nag Hammadi, Egypt. And I'll just close with this quote. Arise and remember that you are the one who has heard, and follow your root, which is I, the compassionate. Fortify yourself against the angels of poverty and the demons of chaos and all those who ensnare you, and be watchful of the lethargic sleep and the garment of the inside of Hades. And I raised him up and sealed him with the light of the water with five seals, so that death would not have power over him from this day on. The Secret Revelation of John. This is Freedom Loves Company. My name is John Shuck. Thank you for joining with me. My topic this hour is fear. Last hour, my guest was Kevin Ryan, and you can catch that podcast on my website when it goes up, johnshuck.com, progressivespirit.net. And it was a great conversation with him as I invited him to talk about 9/11 as well as COVID and kind of the details and the science and all of that. And the second hour, like I did last week, it's kind of more of a spirituality kind of thing, a psychology thing. Last week we talked about, gaslighting, that psychological aspect of deception with the intent of making people doubt their own senses, doubt their own reality. It's based on that, that movie, 1940s, Gaslight, about the husband who turns the gas lights down on purpose to make his wife to think she's having a mental breakdown because she sees them turning down, and he keeps telling her, no, they're not turning down. You're just having a mental breakdown or whatever. That's the kind of thing. That's what this gaslighting is. That's what I talked about last week. But this week, I want to talk about fear and its partner, despair. And we are in the midst, certainly, of a traumatic, fear-based deception. Traumatic, fear-based mind control. That's what's being happened, and it's been unleashed upon the world. And suddenly things that we would have never, ever allowed to have happened not only happen on a regular basis, but are defended by people, right? Defended by the people. I mean, basic rights that we would have never allowed them to give up if they just, went ahead and tried to take them. But they do it through this deception, through this fear of this invisible virus. And 24/7, the media is just pumping that out. I have to wonder about the people working in media. You know, all those who work for everything from the New York Times to your local paper, pumping out this stuff. Do they see it at all? Do they see that they're what they're doing? I mean, do they know? Or do they really believe it? Are they just true believers? Or are they just, you know, in it for the job? I mean, I get it. I get, you know. But we have to stop being in it for the job, whatever it is we're doing. Because all of our jobs, if we're working for any kind of institution or corporation, are controlled at the top by those who are bringing us this dystopia, this delusion, this censorship, this propaganda, these lies, put it right out there. None of this makes sense. None of this makes sense. And you all know that because you're listening to this show. You're listening to this radio network. Or if you're listening on podcast, you're likely with me on this, or close, or somewhere in the ballpark, that somehow this isn't right. But what do we do now? And one of the things that is our danger is that we wake up every morning with fear and great anxiety and despair about the battle ahead and the battle within. And I don't want that. I don't want that for me. And it's there, and I need to know, and I'm recognizing it, and we're all recognizing it. We've got to come to terms with this fear and with this despair. And so I want to read this thing that I wrote today. And actually, most of it is not me. It's a portion of an essay from Tessa Lena, who was my guest a month or so ago on this program. Tessa Lena, philosopher, interesting person from lived in the Soviet Union, now lives in the United States, and quite a good insightful thinker and good writer. And so I want to share a little piece of what she wrote about fear, because that got me thinking today how debilitating fear can be. And so we want to go to a different place than that. So this is what I put together today. Danger is real. Fear is in the mind. And I got that basically. You know, we have these little commercials in between shows on Revolution Radio, and they advertise shows coming up or say what the station's about. And that's one of them. It says, you know, danger is real, but fear, you know, is in the mind. And that got me thinking about this way. Danger is real. Fear is in the mind. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil. For thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. From the 23rd Psalm. The mainstream media, on behalf of its handlers, has the population in a state of fear. Fear of a virus that, no matter how you look at it, is not deserving of fear at all. 99.97% survive. It's about as deadly as the flu. But the fear has created a real danger. Fear has made people become irrational in both belief and behavior. They believe that they're sick when they're not. They believe in an experimental injection that will protect them, but only if everyone is injected. Their fear has been turned, in many cases, into rage. And the target of this fear-induced rage are the people who don't believe the media's propaganda. They are labeled quote, the unvaccinated, and people want these unvaccinated people to suffer until they join the vaccinated. And now we have these so-called variants that, to the extent that they are real, are likely caused or aided by the vaccines themselves. It's not the unvaccinated that are getting sick, but the vaccinated or partially vaccinated. And this is due to adverse reactions to the vaccine or to the variants the vaccine is causing or due to the violence the vaccines are doing to their immune systems. I'm no expert. This is just what I've been reading from doctors and scientists who have not been co-opted by this cult of fear. The media is promoting fear of the unvaccinated every second of every day. And there is danger to the unvaccinated. Apparently, the vaccinated can shed on the unvaccinated and cause harmful reactions. While the unvaccinated could be afraid of this, and I would expect that many are, nonetheless, it's the fear the vaccinated have of the unvaccinated that's driving all of these police state reactions and the vaccine passports and the firing of medical workers and teachers if they are not vaccinated. People just say, well, they deserve it. They deserve to have it. I've even seen some levels of cruelty of nurses themselves saying, well, if you're unvaccinated and you come to the hospital, you're not deserving, right? You're taking the bed for somebody who really needs it. Well, since when did they become so judgy? I mean, they used to treat in the old days, right? You wouldn't judge persons if they're an addict or something. You wouldn't, alcoholic, you know. No, they don't get treatment then because they committed sin. What is this? So, copy of a letter from a doctor in Boone, North Carolina, saying that doctor will not take all unvaccinated patients are off the list. Okay, I got a letter. If you don't do it, I don't want to be your doctor. You're done. So get a vaccination now, or you got 30 days. Wow. We used to have a Hippocratic Oath, I think. Can't imagine that is part of it. So this fear and ultimately disgust, which could be an even more dangerous emotion, that many of the vaccinated display toward the unvaccinated and those who openly question the media, is a very real danger. But it is not good to respond to their fear with our own fear. A few weeks ago, Tessa Lena was on my program, and I have some of her essay in front of me. It's called On Fear of the Monster and Fanaticism, Some Spontaneous Philosophy. And Tessa Lena advocates for love, courage, and joy. I couldn't agree more. But doing so is not easy. Tessa Lena writes, quote, I want to make a clear case against fear and fanaticism, especially in the people, quote unquote, on my side. I think we all occasionally feel like this. I've looked into it, and I've discovered a monster. So how dare you not focus on this thing that hurts so much in me? How dare you? How dare you be so complacent about the monster? Now, sometimes the feeling may be entirely legitimate. The monster may be scary, and it may be in everyone's best interest to get their act together. But for all practical purposes, fear still doesn't help. The dance of fighting the monster without being scared is not an easy dance by any stretch of the imagination. It's a difficult dance that requires lifelong focus and rebalancing yourself again and again. So I'm saying it with hope to be heard and without judgment. The reactive behavior to my senses comes from unhealed trauma, not from the lack of intelligence or good intention. But I also believe that anyone who aspires to show the way to others has the obligation to recognize it when they act on fear and fight the beast with tooth and claw. And it is particularly important when fighting a good fight. So how does fanaticism come to exist? I believe that it's a protective mechanism that shows up in reaction to our fear of horrible things that may happen to us due to no fault of our own, but due to other people's poor choices. It's a tower in one's head that describes the world in a way that minimizes the sense of helplessness. It's a reaction to trauma of real or anticipated unearned pain, combined with the lack of desire to investigate the trauma and tackle it head on, or maybe the lack of understanding how to do it this very second. And perhaps it's a necessary phase of our emotional growth of every human being. With all that said, I feel a very strong desire to make a case against fear, because the times are cray-cray, and we need all hands on deck, and fear is impractical. Fear impacts our bodies, whipping out the hormones that prevent us from thinking straight. If we allow that to happen to us for too long, then instead of acting in an even-headed manner, including in protective ways, we'll act like fools and regret it later. For example, I'm not a fan of the popular medical product of the day. Twitter editorials say there isn't and cannot be any shedding, and perhaps there isn't, except in, say, Pfizer clinical trial documents, C8.3.5, and she has a link, and I'll put them when I put this text on my podcast, and a bunch of other papers like here and here. But if there is, I'm not going to drive myself insane thinking about it all day, but instead do what I think is right, pray for clarity and protection, take a million vitamins, and live my life. We are in this mysterious dance with other people, and we are supposed to help each other heal. And it really is a mystery how it works. So I believe that we have an obligation to relax and have faith in joy. End quote. That was Tessalina from her essay on fear of the monster and fanaticism, some spontaneous philosophy. And I do agree with her that we need to act from love, courage, and joy in this dangerous time. We need to face the fears that we have. And the fear we may have in this current situation with this particular monster is not a unique fear. That is to say, that the fear that breaks out in us is a fear we have had at times dormant and at times active from our own life's history, including childhood. Some of my old-time fears include fear that I will not do the right thing. Right? It probably has something to do with religion. Fear that I won't be adequate to the task when summoned. Fear of losing my security. And that can happen in all various forms, from job to ego identification to whatever else there might be. Fear of conflict. Fear of being made to look foolish, or fear of shame. Fear of suffering. And perhaps of all of those, fear of shame may be most dominant within me. And they have nothing to do with the danger at hand. They're just the fears that have been a part of my own personal history that come out when I find myself faced with danger. And so it's important to recognize that personal fear that drives us, and then to act instead from love, from courage, and joy. That is our primary positive values that make us human, that makes you human. What is it that makes you human? I heard at my work, we had an in-service, and the speaker said something very valuable about change. In the midst of change is what it was about. But thing that change, you need to come to a point where you act from your primary values. And then she said her values were freedom and courage. She won me over with that, actually. Freedom and courage. Yes. Freedom, courage, love, joy. Those things that make you you. Those things that are beautiful. That are positive. That are human. As opposed to non-human. That are your values, your principles, your you. Go there. Go there. That's what we need. We need everybody to be there, don't we? Well, I don't need everybody else. It's not a panic sense. I mean, we do need that, but I mean, I need to be there. I do what I do. That is, right now, I do this radio show, and I'm active on social media. I do what I do in my interactions, in my work, and with my family, because I love life. I love people. I love this world. I love life itself. And I believe this monster is attacking what I love. So I act not from fear of the monster, or from my old fears that like to dominate my life. But I choose to act from love of myself and of others and of this world. I choose to act on the truly powerful things that make me me. Courage and freedom and love and joy. Courage. I get the word encourage. The Latin root of that is cor, C-O-R, cor, where we also get the word heart, right? Coronary. Heart, courage, or heart, is that which knows the fear, but says, choose to act with heart anyway. Act with love. Act with who I really am. And that brings joy. I'm joyful when I act from love. I'm joyful when I act from courage. I'm joyful when I act from freedom. It's love, courage, and joy that will give us the weapons that we need to slay this monster. Our fear is not a helpful motivator. And I will not let the monster take my love, or take my courage, or take my freedom or take my joy. And while I cannot guarantee the outcome of my fight with this monster by using love, courage, freedom, and joy, I do know that if I begin with fear, the monster will win. I woke up with fear today. I see what's happening. Watching in Australia, children, the police pepper spraying children. The scenes from Europe, Germany, and France, and in the United States now, people being manipulated and forced to do things against their will, against their sense of what is right and good and free, against their nature. People having to make all of these horrible choices. And the one that's coming for everybody right now is this injection or your livelihood. Yeah. These are dangerous times. But they do not have to be fearful times. Fears will come up. They will arise. And our old foe, fear, will attack us and want to drive us. And that old fear will be the same one that we've had throughout our trauma-filled lives. If we've had trauma, and most of us have had some kind of trauma. The old fears. Everybody's fear will be slightly different. It'll manifest itself in a different way because it's our own life history. But that fear will come out when we face danger. And this is a pretty big danger. So love and courage and freedom and joy, or whatever your value is, your strength, your what you makes you you, are stronger than fear. Believe that. Know that. Love, courage, freedom, and joy are stronger than fear. When we give them control and let them drive our beliefs and our actions. Acting from love, from courage, from freedom, from joy will result in actions that reflect our true selves. They will be beautiful actions. Whether or not, they result in outcomes that will be convincing to others. But they will defeat the monster, in that the monster will not control our true self. That will be the victory. And when we act from fear, the monster controls us. But when we act from love, courage, freedom, and joy, the monster cannot control us. Shout out of thanksgiving to Tessa Lena for her essay on fear of the monster and fanaticism, some spontaneous philosophy. This is Freedom Loves Company. My name is John Schuck. You hear Freedom Loves Company every Sunday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Mountain Time, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, midnight to 2 a.m. GMT. After the 2 hours, I put these shows on hour-long podcast and radio. They're radio ready. They're usually about 55 or 56 minutes altogether, and they go to the Pacifica Radio Network. And any station can pick it up there or anywhere you want. Again, my website is johnschuck.com and progressivespirit.net. And I'm glad to have you here. Thank you for listening with me. I've got a few minutes left, just about 3 or 4 minutes left. So I just want to thank you. Thank you for listening, for whatever reason you are listening right now to what I'm saying. I mean, I don't take that lightly. I don't take that for granted. And I'm grateful to you and for you, even though I don't know you, but I'm grateful to you and I'm grateful for you. Because if you're listening to me talk, you feel many of the same things I'm feeling and thinking. And you are doing whatever work you got to do to be a candle in a dark world. Danger is real. And I'm just wanting to describe the danger. Part of the danger is that those who are holding candles, the enemy will try to snuff that candle. And that's a real danger. But we don't have to be afraid of that. We just keep lighting that candle. We just keep holding it. We keep illuminating whatever space we can illuminate around us. Because I have a trust. I do have a trust. And I do have a hope that we're not alone in all of this. And I don't know how to describe it spiritually. I don't know. I've been a minister. I've gone through spiritual traditions, and you know, I get that. But I don't want to be sectarian in any way. I just want to talk about that we do have allies. There are, and I don't know who they are or what they all are, but we have allies out there watching for us and working for us and working on our side and working on your side. And those allies want to help us in defeating this monster. And because we're not alone, it feels like that's part of the enemy's plan, is to make us feel alone, to make us feel isolated, to make us feel cray-cray, right? Crazy, that's the gaslighting. That we're alone or we're helpless, and none of that is true, because we're not. We have each other, and even as we, and that's even that may be hard to connect, but we have allies in high places. We have people and spiritual beings, if you like, working on our behalf, working with you, working with me, working to bring out within us that love and that joy and that freedom and that courage and that strength and that beauty, because that's who you really are. You are created in the image of all of that that is good and powerful and wonderful. And we're going to operate from that, right? Every day we have to say to ourselves, when that fear rears its ugly head, we got to deal with it and name it and figure where it came from, I suppose, and do all that. But we ultimately say, step aside, buddy, because I'm going to act from love today. I'm going to act from courage today. I'm going to act from freedom today. I'm going to act from joy today. And you have no right to take that away from me, and you never will. And I will act on that and do what I need to do, however I am doing it, in whatever position I am. I will act from the highest values of being a human being. And I know that there are people on my side, millions and millions of people who want the same thing, millions of millions of people, and millions of millions of angels, right? Also, working with us, working for us, guiding us in unexpected ways. And what we need to do is trust. Trust that that is real. Trust that the angels are looking out for you. The angels are looking out for me. As hard as this is, as scary as this is, fear is not the last word. It's not the first word. Love, courage, freedom, joy. Be well, my beloveds. Take risks.